Good morning, everyone. I'd like to convene the February 24th, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources. Welcome to everyone. We've got a couple of bills that we're going to have hearings on and a possible work session and a possible introduction of a committee measure today. I'm going to first open a public hearing on House Bill 2446. And Chuck, can you tell us about that bill, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill would delete the prohibition against advertising by unregulated producers engaged in small-scale on-premises sale of raw milk directly to consumers.
Thank you very much. And before I call up the witnesses, I'd like to recognize on the record that Representatives McEwen and Esquivel are excused today, both of whom are ill. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Lisa Hansen and anyone else that you'd like to bring up with you. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For the record, Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to visit with you about House Bill 2446. This is an agency bill that we've brought forward as a result of a legal challenge of one of Oregon's laws. So by way of background for you, Oregon prohibits the sale of raw milk with a very narrow exemption, and that is producers that sell directly off from their farm, on the farm. It prohibits advertising, and it only allows those producers to have three cows with two of them lactating at a time. So it was set up to be a very small scale exemption. During late in 2013, inspections, one of our inspectors came across a farm that was advertising for sale raw milk. And the agency entered into a cease and desist and said it's illegal to do this activity under the law. That was challenged by that farm. We went through settlement agreements with the farm and worked with DOJ as well as the farm's legal counsel and agreed that we would, for the time being, because they believe that it was a violation of the constitutional free speech First Amendment, we would stop enforcing the prohibition on advertising. We would bring forward legislation to this body in 2015 that would eliminate the prohibition on advertising, and we would provide an internal directive to our staff for the time being to hold off on the enforcement of that advertising prohibition. So that is simply what you have in front of you. It does not deal with any of the policy issues around the consumption of raw milk or the sale of raw milk in the state. It simply deals with the ban on advertising. And I will pause there, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I have Carla Sanders from the Department of Justice with me to answer any questions. Carla Scott, thank you. I'm sorry, Carla Scott. To answer any questions that you might have around the legal issues.
Very good. Thank you. Questions for either one of our witnesses? Yes, Vice Chair Krieger, please.
What's the difference between 3 and 4 or 2 and 3?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, this very narrow exemption for the sale of raw milk has been in place since the late 50s. You know, unfortunately, I don't know what the logic of the number was at the time, but as we've discussed it in the department, we believe it was basically that people could share raw milk with their neighbors. They had a couple of cows that they were milking and be able to sell it in a very local way at the time. There's also an exemption for goats and sheep as well. That number's a little bit different, but again, it's very small.
Additional questions? Yes, Representative Woodson.
Is the, like, goat cheese and, I know this is cheese versus milk, but, and sheep cheese, are they pasteurized, the stuff that we buy in the grocery stores?
Yeah. So I'm going to bring Lauren forward because he's
okay.
much more familiar
okay.
with that issue than I am. Thanks, Lauren.
Good morning. For the record, Lauren Henderson, the Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture, Chair Witt, represented with it. Not all. Some have been pasteurized and some have not been, and they're usually labeled that way. I'm trying to think of an example before I got up here, and I haven't come up with one.
Okay. Could I follow up?
Please.
So what is the difference between an unpasteurized cheese and an unpasteurized milk?
So I need to get you a better answer than what I'm going to give you, I think, if you want, and I can do that. Yeah, it's the process itself. Really, one is the fluid milk, and then the other is the cheese itself. It's been aged normally, and that process in itself it's not the same for illness reasons.
Representative Woodson, feel free.
That's what I was going to ask. Have there been outbreaks of illness from unpasteurized goat or milk cheese, which is really common now in almost all stores and delis? I'm just trying to understand. And you're saying you can't get the same diseases from unpasteurized cheese as from unpasteurized milk?
So Chair Witt, Representative Woodson, not quite. You can. We have had cases of illnesses with both pasteurized cheese and raw cheese or milk cheese. So, I mean, we've had that. We don't have a lot, thankfully. What was the example?
Queso fresco.
That was a few years ago. What I normally tell folks, and I don't mean to be flippant with this answer, but when things go wrong with food, whether it's raw milk, raw cheese, or just generally food, it usually goes horribly wrong. And that's just the nature of food. When it's something's there for bacteria or whatever.
I just have one other question. I'll leave it alone.
Please.
Can you get listeria from pasteurized products?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, I am not aware of that happening unless the pasteurization process itself failed.
If I might follow up, Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, I think we need to go back and talk with our food safety staff because there are a couple of things that are tickling in the back of my head that may be out there, and I'd like to bring two technical answers back, and we'll just send them over to the committee later today if that's okay.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Please.
Thank you.
And
while you're seeking out answers, if you get an answer for me, how do you get cheese out of a boar's head? Vice Chair McLean.
I think I have only two questions. The first question I had was, you were talking about how the cheese has, you know, some kind of knowledge. I mean, you've got some kind of a sticker on it that basically says pasteurized or unpasteurized. So in this, my understanding is what's in front of us is just about advertisement for raw milk. And so the situation is, are you asking them in their advertisement to make sure that they put raw milk or they put that it's unpasteurized or, you know, what is the advertisement requirement?
Chair Witt, Representative McLean, it simply is raw milk for sale here is what's banned. Mm-hmm. And we are not asking for anything to be changed other than to eliminate that so they could advertise. It is what this proposal brings forward. It doesn't bring forward any limitations on the advertising in terms of adding a safety or hazard claim, for lack of a better term. It doesn't deal with anything else. This is just simply removing that section of this very narrow exemption.
Anyone else fine?
Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you, and we will get you a couple more answers from our food safety people.
Thank you. I appreciate that. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Michael Bindas and Christine Anderson. Good morning to both of you, and welcome to our committee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Excuse me, my name is Michael Bindas. I am a senior attorney with the Institute for Justice, which is a nonprofit public interest law firm headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. And I'm here today to express our support for the department's bill, House Bill 2446. The Institute for Justice litigates in a number of areas, one of which is defending free speech, including more specifically commercial speech rights. That is the right of entrepreneurs and small businesses, including farmers like Christine, to speak about the products and services that they offer. And one of our cases in that area was Anderson versus COBA, the lawsuit that Ms. Hansen mentioned that gave rise to the department's bill. Back in August of 2012, Christine Anderson was visited by an inspector from the state and informed that she had been engaged in the illegal advertising of raw milk. That illegal advertising was putting the prices of Christine's perfectly legal milk on her farm's website. She was instructed to take that information down immediately, which of course she did. And had she not, state law provides for fines as high as $6,250 and up to a year in jail, again, for the crime of putting truthful information about a lawful product on the internet.
Would you move just a little bit back from the mic?
Sure. I apologize, Representative Frederick. We heard about Christine's plight and agreed to represent her free of charge to challenge the advertising ban. This was not a lawsuit for any kind of monetary damages. Rather, it was simply to prevent enforcement of this unconstitutional law. And our argument was quite simple. The First Amendment prohibits government from banning speech about a lawful product. And that argument was very well supported by case law. The U.S. Supreme Court has a number of precedents very clear in this area. Number one, the First Amendment protects commercial speech. Number two, restrictions on the advertisement of lawful products are subject to very rigorous constitutional scrutiny. And in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court has struck down numerous advertising restrictions on lawful products, even on potentially hazardous or unhealthy products like tobacco, alcohol, and pharmaceuticals. And complete bans on advertising, like the raw milk advertising ban, are particularly constitutionally problematic. The Department of Justice looked at these same precedents and came to the same conclusion that we had, which is Oregon's ban on the advertisement of raw milk was problematic under the First Amendment. And so we entered into the settlement agreement that Ms. Hansen referenced, which required Director COBA to issue the directive instructing her staff not to enforce the ban, and also to propose a bill to repeal the ban. That bill is the department's bill 2446, and that's all it would do. It would repeal an unenforceable provision in the Oregon revised statutes. Nothing more, nothing else. And it's important to stress what the bill would not do. This is not an attempt to open a policy debate about raw milk. It is not an attempt to expand access to raw milk. The fact of the matter is this bill, should it pass, would leave every other restriction on raw milk producers intact. That includes the two producing cow limit that Ms. Hansen referenced. That includes the requirement that sales only occur directly to consumer on site at the farm where it was where the milk was produced. This bill would leave all of those other restrictions in place. It would simply allow farmers who are operating within those very strict parameters to speak about a product that they are lawfully selling. And for that reason, we would respectfully request the committee's support for House Bill 2446. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Christine Anderson. I am the farmer that's been referenced before. I run a small raw milk operation in McMinnville. We milk two brown Swiss cows on our farm, and we sell the milk directly from the premises. So as such, we operate under the raw milk exemption in Oregon, where we have two producing cows. We were not advertising our milk, and our customers pick up the milk on the farm at the farm site. So in August of 2012, I was visited by an ODA employee who asked me to remove the information relating to milking cows and the price that we'd listed for our milk on our website, which I complied with, and then we went ahead with this lawsuit. I'd also like to point out that we did remove other information relating to the milking of cows that involved what our safety practices were for the farm. So we had no information about milking cows. I had felt at the time that maybe listing the price on the website was not advertising, but ODA saw it as advertising. So we went ahead with this lawsuit, and I will also point out that the settlement happened last February, and that this law has not been being enforced for the last 12 months of the year, of this past year. Whatever your knee-jerk reaction to raw milk yourself is, I would just like you to look at the fact that this is a legal product that I have chosen to engage in producing within these restrictions, within this exemption, and I would like the opportunity to be able to put information about our farm on the website, and also which also includes our farm safety information, which we send our milk off for testing, and we post our test results, and lots of procedures about milking our cows and what we do to keep our milk safe. So I would ask you to look at this bill and understand that I would like to be able to do something as simple as post the price of our milk on our website. Whether you agree with the raw milk subject itself, I'm not asking to milk more cows. I'm not asking to sell milk in retail stores. These are customers that are already coming to us seeking out this product, and I ask you to look at it merely in the light of my constitutionality of being able to speak about it.
Thank you very much. Committee members, anything for our two panel members? Vice Chair McLean?
Just because you said you didn't want me to have a knee-jerk reaction, of course I do. My knee-jerk reaction is that I drank raw milk for the first 8 years of my life, and it was just fine. Okay, so don't assume that we aren't drinking raw milk sometime during our life. But this is not about raw milk, as you point out. This is just simply about advertising your product. So I'll keep my opinions to myself, and I will just look at the fact that this is about the right to advertise a product that you're selling.
That's legal in Oregon.
That's legal in Oregon.
Thank you.
Yes.
Further questions or comments?
One.
Yes, Representative Barreto, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. To the legal counsel, and maybe this isn't germane to this since it's a free speech, but if this product is legal in Oregon, then is it legal for the state to come in and say, but you can only produce this much, or you can only have this many cows or goats? Or
Chair Witt, Representative Barreto, you're correct to note that this wouldn't that involves a wholly different issue. One is a First Amendment issue. The other, if anything, might be an economic liberty issue that might be treated under the Due Process Clause. To be honest with you, I've never had occasion or reason to look into the legality of those other caps, for example, the cap on the number of producing cows, simply because that's not what this lawsuit was ever intended to be about. And we don't intend to make that lawsuit or this bill or this hearing anything other than attuned to that very narrow free speech issue. So I apologize that I couldn't give you a better answer than that, but I've just not looked into that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing nothing further from the committee, I want to apologize to both of you for having to carry this bill over. We had you scheduled the other day, and unfortunately, we had a 15-minute technical difficulty with the recording system, and then the bill that we were hearing that day had vastly more testimony than we had anticipated. And so for the inconvenience that have caused either one of you, I apologize. It was really beyond our control. I want to thank you both very, very much, and commit to you that we intend to work this bill as quickly as possible. Our committee has very little tolerance for violations of our constitutional rights, and it will be my full intention to get this bill up and out of here as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Chairwoman.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much. With that, is there anyone else on the public who would like to testify on House Bill 2446? Last and final call? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2446. I'll give you that one. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2455. Mr. Gallagher?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2455 extends the privilege tax for the harvesting of mercantile forest products for calendar years beginning January 1, 2016 and January 1, 2017.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to call up, please, Paul Bell. Paul, did you have any? You had someone you're going to bring up.
I don't think you want to.
Good morning, and welcome to you both.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair Witt and members of the committee. For the record, I am Paul Bell, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Forestry. With me today is our forest economist, Brandon Ketzel. The Department of Forestry appreciates the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2455 amends ORS 321.015 to establish the forest products harvest tax rates for calendar years 2016-2017. These taxes support the Oregon State University Forest Research Laboratory, OSU's professional forestry education, and the Oregon Department of Forestry's administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. For the Department of Forestry, the bill maintains the concept of shared responsibility between the general public and the forest landowners for resource protection and the public benefits provided by the Forest Practices Act. The shared responsibility is reflected in the joint funding of the program by public funds and harvest tax revenue. The tax rates that are established by the bill are set on a per thousand board foot harvested basis. So, like for comparison, a loaded log truck that you see going down the road on average carries about 3,000 board foot of logs. The rates are calculated considering current biennium ending balances, projected budget requirements for the next biennium, and forecasted harvest levels for the next 2 years. As shown in Attachment 1 of the provided testimony, Oregon harvest levels declined from the 1990s due to a reduction in harvest from federal lands. As shown in Attachment 2, that resulted in rate increases as the budget needs were spread across lower harvest volumes. Since 1999, the harvest levels had generally stabilized at about 4 billion board feet per year, and tax rates had stabilized as well, until the recent economic downturn caused a decline in harvest levels as market demand dropped. The 2009 harvest of 2.7 billion board feet is the lowest since the post-depression harvest of 2.6 billion board feet in 1934. The 2010 harvest increased slightly to 3.2 billion board feet. Harvest levels in 2011 and 2012 increased to 3.6 billion board feet. In 2013, Oregon's timber harvest rose to 4.2 billion board feet, marking the fourth consecutive years of increases, reflecting the economic recovery that has occurred over those years. We're currently anticipating annual harvest levels for the next 2 years of approximately 4 billion and 4.1 billion board feet. The Oregon Department of Revenue collects the harvest tax and transfers the receipts to the Department of Forestry on a quarterly basis. At this time, we still have two of the eight revenue transfers remaining in the current biennium. These transfers will occur late this month and early May of this year. Because the new rates in House Bill 2455 for the next two-year period are based in part on the ending balance in this biennium, as usual, we recommend that rates not yet be inserted into the bill. In addition to the current biennium actual revenue considerations, the harvest tax is directly linked with the department's forthcoming biennial budget. Therefore, the rate calculations must remain fluid until the agency's budget bill is at or near completion so that the two can link up. The link necessitates a concurrent consideration of House Bill 2455 and the agency's budget bill 5019 in the Joint Ways and Means Committee during the final legislative budget process. So in summary, the department supports House Bill 2455 and welcomes the opportunity to work with the Legislative Assembly as the revenue and budget processes move forward. Thank you for your time and consideration, and we'd be happy to answer any questions or get into the details of what the Forest Practices Act provides.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't know if you want to get too far into the Forest Practices Act here this morning. We could be here for a long time. Any questions or comments from the committee? Vice Chair Krieger, please.
Well, in Bill, line 1920, levies a privilege tax for the, and it goes on, for the privilege of harvesting merchantable forest products. It's not a privilege, it's a right if you own the land and pay the property tax and planted the trees and worked your butt off for 50 years. I don't like the word privilege. We need to change that and really show what we're doing in forest management, because it is a lifetime endeavor that many times the person who harvests isn't even the person who managed that land for maybe 50, 60 years, even longer on the west side. I agree with what we're doing, but it always has bothered me that it's a privilege.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I agree with you. But that
we'll
is
work
what we
on
do.
A word change.
Anything further? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Dean Manis. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you.
Pleased to have you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Witt, Vice Chair Krieger. My name is Thomas Manis. I'm the Dean of the College of Forestry at Oregon State University and the Director of the Forest Products Laboratory here. Before I start with my testimony today, I'd really like to say a word of thanks to the forest products industry and our Oregon small private woodland owners for this tax that they pay, which is a voluntary tax for the most part, that they pay to support the Forest Products Laboratory. I can say that this is unique among the United States and the supported colleges of forestry around the country, and it's really what makes Oregon State University the strong college of forestry that it is in a big way. So it's really important to the state and to us. The state of Oregon is the number one forest products, solid wood forest products producer in the United States. And as I've testified here before, Oregon is the best place in the world to grow trees today. And the College of Forestry supports in a large way the forest products industry in this state, which employs about 55 to 60,000 Oregonians, primarily in rural communities in this state. And the Forestry Research Laboratory works in nearly every aspect of forestry, forest products, environmental protection. This Forest Products Research Laboratory and the funding that comes from the industry associated with this supports a program in understanding fish and wildlife and managed forest habitat, which is very important to production of forest products. Conducts research in watershed science and water quality. Supporting our new Institute for Working Forest Landscapes, which is really about the connection between people and rural communities and the forest products industry and resilient ecosystems, and also supports our new Institute for Wood Building Design and Manufacturing, which is really about production of high-value added wood products that could dramatically change the employment multipliers in our state. The unique thing about the Forest Products Research Laboratory is that for every dollar that's appropriated from the state for our laboratory, we match that with $6 from the outside. So it's a $41 million research institute, but really it's supported by $6 million in state funds, which is really remarkable. And the industry providing this one-to-one match on harvest tax dollars is the base that really provides that. And then we bring in an additional 55% of the Forestry Research Laboratory's funding through grants and contracts that allows us to do. That base funding really allows us to attract state grants, federal grants, National Science Foundation grants that really make the laboratory what it is. So this is a really important part of the funding. I really appreciate your support for it. I appreciate the industry support, the small woodland owner support, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions that you have in this area.
Representative Whitson, please.
I just want to make a comment. In graduate school, I worked at the OSU Forest Research Institute for Dr. Ken Swanson, measuring landslides in the Cascades as part of my summer work to earn money to go to grad school, and it's a really great, great program.
Thank you very much.
Have there. I don't know, does he still work there?
It's no.
A long time ago.
Well, he is still there, okay. But not still working there. He's retired, but yeah. It's such a great place that people retire and they don't want to leave. So they stay. But that is a good point that the Forest Products Laboratory and the Forest Products Research Laboratory offers employment for students and graduate students, and that's a big part of our workforce, and it also really helps them attend school and pay for their education.
Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that $1 to $6 return, that's extremely impressive. It sounds like a program that's extremely valuable also to the state in terms of moving our forest products forward. And is the Andrews Experimental Forest, is that part of your system?
Yes, it is. The H.J. Andrews Forest itself is National Forest, U.S. National Forest land. It's on the Willamette National Forest. The long-term environmental research program there is supported directly by Oregon State University and the Forestry Research Laboratory. So the director is a faculty member, and a lot of the research staff are directly employed by the research laboratory. So,
yeah, I went there my undergrad. I was at University of Oregon and took a class called Life of the Forest, and we went out to that particular site, and it was extremely impressive. Now, that was many years ago, but I'm sure it's still very impressive.
It's an absolutely unique, amazing facility for conducting research, and what we're really interested in doing now is expanding that idea to a working forest laboratory, because the H.J. Andrews is really a protected forest laboratory. We study forests that are untouched. What we need to do desperately in this state is study working forests and have a permanent laboratory for understanding water quality impacts and, you know, all kind of fish and wildlife habitat impacts on working forests. And this is something that we're moving forward with now, and we're trying to partner with the U.S. Forest Service on that, or possibly Department of State Lands. But this is an area that we really need to move into.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dean Manis, there were a number of us that went and visited portions of Starker Forest last Friday, it was a exceedingly worthwhile field trip, and your suggestion that we need a laboratory for working forests, I think, is well taken, well taken.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate your appearance today
and
everything that you're doing for this great state.
Thank you so much.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Roger Beyer and Christina McNitt. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Christina McNitt with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. We represent the larger forest landowners and manufacturers in the state, and we are big payers of this harvest tax. House Bill 2455 is a perennial agency bill. You see it every 2 years, and it sets a forest products harvest tax rate for the upcoming 2 years, as previously mentioned. Currently, I thought if I took a 60,000-foot level view of this, it might be of interest to you. The current tax rate is $3.43 per 1,000 board feet. And while you've heard about two programs here that it actually funds five programs, and this bill sets the rate for three of them. You can kind of think of the forest products harvest tax as supporting education, regulation, and research, kind of as general categories. It funds the Oregon Forest Resources Institute at 89 cents per 1,000 board feet, the Professional Forestry Education at the College of Forestry, and I would say that even if the dean wasn't in the room. And that was newly instituted last biennium at 10 cents per 1,000 board feet. The Forest Research Lab, which you just heard about, at 84 cents per 1,000 board feet. And again, the magic there is, I'm sure you've all heard about the so-called statewides, where natural resource interests, and OFIC is a part of that, lobby to fund ag experiment stations, ag extension, and the Forest Research Lab. So this is a portion of that. And unique to the other programs, the industry actually matches dollar for dollar the general fund allocation to the Forest Research Lab. The fourth program is fire protection. 63 cents per 1,000 board feet goes into the Forest Land Protection Fund, which is one of many streams that funds the Forest Land Protection Fund to pay for fire suppression. And then finally, 97 cents per 1,000 board feet goes into the Forest Practices Program at the Department of Forestry, which is also unique. Specifically for natural resource agencies, the Department of Forestry is not funded with permit fees, but rather 40% of the administration of the entire Forest Practices Program is paid for through harvest taxes. Historically, I've already covered that, general fund matches the Forest Research Lab and the industry one-to-one. This hearing is the first in a long pilgrimage, typically, of this bill's trip to Ways and Means. It will be considered by you as a committee. Typically, it moves without a recommendation and blank spots to revenue. And then it goes through a similar song and dance in revenue and goes to Ways and Means. And the reason is because, as already mentioned, the rates are set based on the higher education budget and what our match for the Forest Research Lab would be, the Department of Forestry's budget and the 40% match for forest practices, reserve balances, and projected harvest levels. Just to put this in perspective, 2 years ago at the last session, just considering the three rates that this bill sets out of the five programs, based on a projection of 7.1 billion board feet harvest, this bill taxed the industry about $14 million. So it's a very important bill to the industry. It's very important that we get it right. It's long and laborious, but we appreciate your attention to this very much. I'm just going to close by saying this is my first opportunity to speak to you as a committee, and I'm really proud of the staff resources that we have that we would like to make available to you as you deliberate a number of issues in front of this committee during the session. I think you've met Heath Curtis, our general counsel and director of government affairs. We also have a professional trained forester from the College of Forestry, Seth Barnes. We have an economist on our staff, Link Cannon, and we have a specialist in forest protection, both diseases and fire, with Mike Deichsel. I would invite all of you to reach out to us. If we can be resources to you, we'd be delighted to do so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Roger Beyer here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. So OFIC, you just heard from, are the large timberland owners of more than 5,000 acres of forest land and or a processing facility. Oregon Small Woodlands Association is the rest of them.
There are a lot.
There is probably somewhere in the 150,000 timberland owners in the state of Oregon. Our association represents about 1,500 of them or has those for members. So our ownership is typically about 100 acres. That's the typical small woodland owner in the state of Oregon, but ownerships can go up as high as 5,000 acres. We do support the concept of this forest products harvest tax. We have always partnered with the industry and with our partners on the government side with OSU and the Department of Forestry. We would encourage you to leave the numbers blank at this time, and if you see on the sheet, I've checked neutral as support or opposed, because at this point in time, it's too early in the session to know what the rate should be and whether or not we're going to support what rate. But we would encourage you to ask your leadership to put a subsequent referral in addition to the one that's currently to the Revenue Committee, but also a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee on this bill, because it needs to get to that deliberating body where they can actually figure out what the rate needs to be to set the rate. So before you move the bill, we would appreciate those two subsequent referrals, not just the one that it currently has. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I would, to Representative Krieger's question about the privilege to pay the tax, being mandated to pay the tax, I think if you want to go into that, delve very carefully. I believe that it became a privilege tax. I think it was 97, but it might have been 99. It was one of my first sessions in the building. And it was when we were settling the difference between a severance tax and what we now have as a privilege tax for timber. The word privilege was chosen very carefully as to stay out from underneath the confines of ballot measures 5 and 50, which was going on at those times as to whether they were a real property tax or not. So I'm not saying I would oppose changing the word privilege, but as you look into that, dive very carefully to make sure we don't upset an apple cart that was very carefully crafted about 20 years ago. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate both of your testimonies and that very very good advice and background, too, Roger, as well. Questions or comments? Committee members, as both Roger and Christina have pointed out, this bill is going to need to make its way to Ways and Means. When we work the bill, I am going to be asking for your consent to do a second referral. So if you'd please keep that in mind, I would appreciate it. With that, is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify this morning on House Bill 2455? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on that bill. And if someone could poke their head out and see if Joe Rollator is out there and tell him he's going to be on deck here in a minute, I'd appreciate that. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2501. Mr. Gallagher, could you remind us what this bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2501 requires that the annual report by the state forester to the emergency board include private property loss information for fires of 1,000 acres or more.
Thank you very much. And you may remember that one of our colleagues, Representative Whitsitt, is one of the folks who brought this bill forward, and we had some very excellent testimony on it, and no opposition that I recall. With that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McLean.
You are?
Or Vice Chair Krieger, perhaps.
Or maybe Vice Chair Krieger.
Very similar, please.
Yeah.
Well, you can recognize me, but
Chair, would I move House Bill 2501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation?
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger moves House Bill 2501 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Barreto.
Yes, aye.
Representative Esquivel.
Excused.
Representative Frederick.
Yes.
Representative Gorsuch.
Yes.
Representative McEwen.
Excused.
Representative Whitsitt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Vice Chair McLean.
Aye.
Chair Whit.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Representative Whitsitt, would you like to carry this bill?
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2501. And committee members, I'd like to have... He's not here yet.
You want to stand at ease?
We're going to stand at ease here for a moment. We're back on the record. I'd like to open a possible introduction work session and entertain a motion on LC 1434. I'm going to recognize Joe Rollator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Rollator. I was asked to help draft this legislation because it's something that I've been interested in for many years. When a small timber lot owner applies for certification as sustainable, one of the things that is necessary is that they provide wildlife benefits. Under the current Forestry Practices Act, when we log as in a clear cut, we have to reforest the entire area in order to meet our standards under the Forestry Practices Act and our assessments. So what this bill would do is it would allow a small portion of our reforestation to be replaced by wildlife habitat benefits, and we would the bill asks the Department of Forestry to write those rules and to enforce those rules. Those of us who've tried this there's some science out there. There's some help from OSU about what to plant and how to plant it. Some of us have taken pasture land and converted it back to wildlife benefit, and we find that it seems to me, and I'm not a scientist, so I haven't tested this out, but it seems to me that when we provide high-value food crop for elk and deer, they don't mess with our trees quite so much. And my forest is at the point where I'm not too worried about elk and deer damage anymore. So I just have an interest in this, and Representative Krieger asked me to help him draft it, and that's what I did.
Very good. With that, any questions or comments? Yes, Vice Chair Krieger.
There are a few food plots that have been put in Oregon, as you say, on ag land.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one very close to forest land. And I think you've been up there. And recently, I fertilized that food plot. And in past years, what was interesting is that during the time there was bud break, I had deer and elk, of course, in those areas, and it appeared at first glance that they actually were utilizing that in preference to the buds of the trees, which was very important to me. And they stayed on that in throughout the spring and into early summer, and then came back again in the fall after the first rains, and again provided some pretty good foliage for wildlife, you know, deer and elk. But one other thing that's there, which, Mr. Chair, you'd be interested in, is turkeys. They're there throughout the summer, even, because there's grasshoppers get in that, you know, foliage, and they're in there eating grasshoppers. So I think there's a great benefit.
Huh.
And just recently, I went through the certification of the American Tree Farm System, as you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things they look at is, what are you doing to enhance wildlife on your tree farm? Because that's one of the criteria to being certified. And then your wood off that piece of ground is also certified as environmentally sound and you know, good, as you say. So I think this is a great opportunity for Oregon to go where many, many other states already have allowed their forest land owners to go and take a very small portion of their land and put it into food plots for wildlife. I think it's interesting that any woodland owner that does that, I'm willing to bet you, if you go look at them, they're the ones that are also very extensively managing their forest land. They're planting the right number of trees, I just, by the way, had 2,500 put in Saturday on a small little piece I had logged. So I think for the future, it's a good opportunity.
Great. Very good. Any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you very, very much,
thank
Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate that. I'm going to now recognize Vice Chair Krieger.
Chair, would I move that LC 1434, dated 11-3-14, be introduced as a committee bill?
Representative Krieger has moved that LC 1434 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion on his motion? I'm not seeing any. Committee members, is there any objection to the introduction of LC 1434 as a committee bill? Seeing none and hearing none, the motion is adopted and it will be introduced as a committee bill. And I close the work session on LC 1434. At this point, committee members, is there anything for the good of the order? We've had a very fast day today, unlike the previous day. So
let's savor it as we can.
Yes. I certainly appreciate all of your help with this. And with that, Chuck, what do we have coming up here next time?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on Thursday, we'll be looking at House Bill 2808, 2997, and 2998. And all three of these bills deal with basically ways to develop programs to increase harvesting of Western juniper and manufacture and distribution of products made from Western juniper.
Thank you very much. Committee members, this should be an incredibly interesting day, not only for the topic, but some of the witnesses that we have coming in are top-notch in their fields, and I just think it's going to be one of the best days we've had so far this session. With that, we stand adjourned. Thank you all very much. Yeah. Thank you all very much. Yeah.